Welcome to another episode of Crossing Cultures. In today's discussion, Phil and his co-host, Dr. Brian Howell, continue sharing their perspectives on Hollywood films and explore the ways in which they find enjoyment in movies as Christians. If you're just discovering our show for the first time, we invite you to explore our earlier episodes where we've engaged in many thought-provoking discussions. Our past conversations have covered topics including race in the gospel, abortion, the Ukrainian refugee crisis, and more. Stay updated with our upcoming episodes by subscribing to our channel on the podcast platform of your choice or on YouTube. You can also follow us on Facebook or Instagram at crossing.cultures. And now, here is our next episode of Crossing Cultures titled A Perspective on Hollywood, Part 2.
Hi, my name is Phil Metzger, and in 1992, I moved to Moscow, Russia. From there, I lived in the beautiful Central European country of Hungary, where my family and I spent the next 20 years living, learning, and sharing about Jesus. Different foods, culture, and language, but underneath it all, we discovered the most amazing people. We learned that to share the gospel effectively, we had to adjust. We had to cross cultures. Now we're back in the U.S., and we're discovering that this country is a melting pot of culture. This show is committed to helping Christians connect to those who think, believe, and live differently than them. This is Crossing Cultures.
This episode was initially recorded in early February 2022. However, instead of airing it immediately, we redirected our efforts to assist Ukrainian refugees following Russia's war on Ukraine on February 24, 2022. As a result, we decided to wait a year before sharing this episode with you. This way, we could focus on sharing our experiences with Ukrainian refugees in our previous season of Crossing Cultures. This is important because the references in this episode refer to Oscar-nominated movies that were released in 2021. For those who don't have a point of reference of what movies came out in 2021, just remember, this episode was filmed a few months before Will Smith and Chris Rock had a run-in at the Oscars. So with all that in mind, before we continue our conversation from our previous episode, we want to look back at a clip from that conversation. In this segment, Phil and Dr. Brian Howell discuss how Christians should choose the Hollywood content they consume. Check it out.
One of the things that I just think is important as we think about culture is we think about the stories that we tell, we think about the media that we consume, and you know, the Academy Award nominations were just announced on Tuesday, so it's kind of the movie season. And so I thought, well, let's have a conversation about movies. Let's have a conversation about how our culture is shaped by the movies that are being made, by the things that are popular, and then obviously how the church should think about the ways that we interact with these things, you know, what we watch and what we affirm and how we engage, right? Like, I think this is a conversation that in some ways never gets old because there's always new things happening in the world of media and in the narrative, you know,
totally,
sort of tropes that are out there. And so it's always good to kind of stop and say, what are we doing? And what should we be doing as Christians when we think about what sorts of stories and narratives and entertainment we are engaging.
But I thought that is an interesting thing, because whenever you hear the topic of like, oh, let's talk about movies, it's pretty quickly we're like, well, you better not have seen that. You should not know about this. We kind of move in that direction, don't we?
Yeah, I think there's this tendency to think of it in terms of danger and risk and the world, right? Like, so the Bible uses the language of the world sometimes to mean obviously what God created, so God so loved the world, but then sometimes in the sense of like things that are not of God, right? Like the flesh and the world and things that are, and movies have been put into this category of the world, things that the world does, and therefore it often gets thrown into the category of like sinful things.
Right.
And of course, you know, movies do depict, you know, things that are not of God. I mean, not every movie is, you know, just showing us worship services, but I think that they're also of the world in that sense of like God so loved the world, right? Like they're part of creation and they're part of creativity and they're part of who we are as human beings, that we tell these stories. And we've gotten really good at telling these stories, really sophisticated at telling these stories, which in some ways makes them important, maybe a little dangerous in the sense of like, if we're not thinking about it, then they can influence us in ways we don't even notice, but mostly important, right? And so worthy of our time and attention. because they're part of this creation that God gave us.
That's such a good point, Brent. And I especially like what you just said there of like, because I think, you know, we can say, oh, I didn't see that movie. Oh, I didn't watch that movie. Kind of a, you know, a moralistic, like, yeah, I'm better because I didn't see that. But it doesn't mean it's not influencing us. It doesn't mean that we're not being influenced by this. So better to be thinking about it and having like really, you know, strong, good, healthy, intellectual, and even godly conversations about it, rather than just saying, oh no, it's all bad, it's all evil. It all gets categorized in this idea of the world. When if we really believe that God made the world, then we need to engage in these things in ways that help other believers to have conversations about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever, you know, people ask me, you know, what's like about the lines, you know, like what lines should we draw? Like what should Christians watch? What should they not watch? And where do we draw the line sort of thing? I think the real danger of any movie, of any, really any entertainment, but we'll stick with the movie, you know, any movie, the real danger of it is when you don't think, yes, when you just let it sort of like wash over you and you just kind of absorb it.
That was a segment from our previous episode. Here is Phil and Dr. Brian Howell continuing this thought in this week's episode titled A Perspective on Hollywood, Part 2.
I guess the fear for a lot of people is like, it'll stir something in you in the wrong, which is, of course, very possible. But I like what you said earlier, and I don't want to take it away because I think you've got more to say on this. But I like that you're saying like, it's when we don't think about the movies that we're watching that we become more at risk of like it influencing us in the negative way. But
yeah,
how do you talk about that?
Yeah. And that's a great question, because I think this is probably the question that a lot of people who are listening are asking. Is like, I want to know like how, you know, what movies to watch or like what are good things to watch or bad things to watch. You know, I mean, there's like straight up Bible verses that say, you know, things that are true and beautiful and lovely, you know, think on these things. And there are some movies that are not beautiful, but can be profoundly true, I think. So I like to, well, first of all, and I'm going to ask you, I want to know your strategy for fathering in a minute here and ask you how you talk to your kids about movies and stuff, because I think that's important too. But before we get to that, I'll just say, you know, as an adult, I think I don't have too much fear of exposing myself to something that I think is going to, you know, harm me.
Right.
Of course, I try to be, you know, judicious, you know, like pornography, which is only there to just create sexual desire. It's like, well, okay, that's not helpful. Like, I'm not going to.
Yeah, this is just like wrong. Yeah.
You know, and there are some pretty good movies that I kind of regret seeing. I will say the one movie that I really kind of wish I could just erase from my brain is the movie Seven. Have you seen that movie?
Seven. I know I did. And I can't, it was a long time ago.
That is the one movie it was so violent. And it didn't show the violence. It just implied and talked about the violence.
Right.
It was so brutal.
And like too much.
Too much. Too much. I didn't need that. I wish that were not in my brain. I wish it were gone forever, but there. And, you know, darn you, Brad Pitt, for making a really compelling movie. But, you know, I just.
If you weren't so good, I'd forget the movie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I could have done without that one. I didn't know that going in. But if anybody asked me, you know, like, should I see Seven? I'd be like, no, you don't need to see that.
Right.
Other than just those very few kind of exceptions, I think I want to be exposed to movies that I think are profoundly true. One of the movies that I often go to as an example is this movie called Leaving Las Vegas with Elizabeth Shue and Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage got an Academy Award for this movie. And it's a dark, dark movie. And the movie opens with Nicolas Cage going through a liquor store, like filling his cart with liquor and sitting down to kill himself by just drinking himself to death. Then it goes to Elizabeth Shue, who is working in prostitution in Las Vegas and has like just been beat up by her client or something, you know, and these two like deeply broken people find each other. And the first thing they do is sort of promise each other, we will not try to fix the other person, we'll not try to change the other person. And so they just live. They just sort of form this relationship around their brokenness. And it's just this horrible, heart-wrenching, awful kind of movie. I'm really selling it, right?
I can't wait to go watch it now.
Yeah, right? Everyone's going
to
rush out.
No, but I mean, I see where you're going, though. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just such a depiction of sin and the ways in which, you know, left to our own devices in a hopeless world, like, why wouldn't we? You know, why wouldn't you end up there? And what it looks like when... Yeah, in just hopelessness. And I kind of always go back to that movie as like, I'm really glad I saw that movie, because I think it really did say something true about the world and about the way that God made it and about what the world means with God in it and what the world would mean without God in it. It's graphic, you know, there's some graphic depictions of sex, there's graphic violence, you know, people treat each other horribly in this movie. But I don't feel like my soul was harmed by seeing those things. I think it was actually blessed by the exposure to the deep truth that was embedded in those things. Mm-hmm. So I always want to ask myself, like, you know, if something really negative is being depicted on screen, why? Like, right. What's the purpose? And what, how is it going to affect me going forward in my ability to know and understand and serve God?
Mm. Good point.
Do you have any movies that you think, oh, I wish I hadn't seen that movie?
Gosh, the worst part is I don't remember if I do.
You blocked it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I totally blocked it. No, I mean, I've definitely walked away. I just can't think of the names of any, but I've definitely walked away going, why did I like, and when I say a waste, I don't mean because it was just like not important, but because it was like, it kind of felt like not good.
Yeah.
Like I didn't need that, you know, and this is what's interesting. And I think you raise a good point. It's not necessarily, oh, it had like, it showed things I shouldn't see or said things I shouldn't hear or whatever, but just like some of the storyline sometimes, like storyline really can kind of tweak me if it's you know, like, oh my gosh, there was that one movie, it was in Mississippi. Oh, my wife will, yeah, she's going to kill me that I can't remember it, but it was that.
About the civil rights guys?
No, it was before this, an older one of a young girl who, a young black girl who was raped and died. And then a white guy came in. It was Matthew McConaughey was the lawyer. Do you remember this?
Yes, right.
Can't think of the name of it. It was like really hard to, of course, again, nothing like they're not showing things, but like the storyline was like, I mean, from about 5 minutes into the movie, and we went to the theater, this is back, you know, and my wife was like crying the whole movie. Like, yeah, why did you bring me here? You know, because it just so like hard to, like, and I think it's important to see these things too. It's not like it shouldn't happen, but sometimes you go, man, I'm already thinking in that vein of thought so much. And then to watch it just kind of like hurts even deeper, you know, Those, and then like I asked the question, I mean, I know you were going to ask me the question, but I'm thinking like, okay, so that movie you were talking about with Elizabeth Shue and Nicolas Cage, would you have one of your kids go see that?
Yeah, no. Well, you know, not, I mean, now, yes.
Yeah,
because
right.
Now okay, my daughter is 26, you know. Right.
You don't get to decide what she sees now.
Yeah. Exactly. But would I recommend that she see it? Yes, I would.
Yeah.
I would say this is a movie that I think you could really enjoy and you could really think deeply about. Now she, although I would warn her about the depictions of gender violence in that movie, and say that might be the kind of thing that you just don't want in your mind's eye, right?
Right.
Like you would just be like, why would I want to see this? But I think I could see her, you know, being able to watch it and think about it and respond to it in a way that would be a blessing. But for younger kids, no, I wouldn't expose them to, especially to that movie, because all of the depictions of sex and violence are very realistic and serve a sort of deep narrative purpose that I just, you know, they'd have to be developmentally ready for that.
And there's something to that, right? Like there is a developmental, like you got to get there before you can, you know, and especially if you're like, you know, I think in a Christian home, it's like, we can spend, you know, so much like, don't watch anything, stay pure, don't ever let anything, but you know, we lost that battle in one sense. I mean, and maybe it's a battle we probably shouldn't have been having in the way that a lot of Christians did, but you know, like I want to be able to have a voice where I can tell my kids like, no, please don't watch that. Like that's like, don't do that. And then them know that I'm not saying no, because I just, you know, I'm too good or too holy or in some kind of a, I want to keep them from something that they'd probably love, but like that trust of, hey, do me a favor, especially when they were in their teenage years, like do me a favor. Mm-hmm. I know you, I know the movie. I know it's not where you need to fill your head. You know, you're not, you just don't need it. You're not going to need it at 50. You're not going to need it now. It's not for you.
Before we continue our discussion about movies in Hollywood, we like to share a snippet from a past season of Crossing Cultures. This segment is called Seeing People, Not Issues. Check it out.
Here's the first thing I want you to consider. when we talk about LGBTQ and Christianity, it's this. This is not an issue. These are people. This is not an issue, the gay issue. No. These are people. When you make something an issue, it is, and trust me, I know because I'm just like you. When I make something an issue, it's easy for me to be judgmental. It's easy for me to pull myself away from the actual people and just make very harsh comments. This is this way. This is that way. But now, when I sit down with a young man who's coming into my church and who's crying and he's saying, I'm wrestling with this. Can we please talk? It's not an issue anymore. It's a person. And if you don't have people in your life that are wrestling it, the people in your life have people that are wrestling with it. I promise you. You want to engage in the world we live in? You want to be a missionary, which I believe God wants us to be? I think God's calling Calvary San Diego to be a missionary to San Diego. Then you have to start by recognizing it's not an issue. These are people. I'm as guilty as anyone of letting issues take over what should have been a people thing. You want to reach people? Then see them as people, not as an issue.
That clip came from Season 2, Episode 8 of Crossing Cultures, titled LGBTQ and Christianity. You can catch up on previous episodes of Crossing Cultures on any podcast platform or on YouTube. And now, back to the show.
We kind of got lucky in a sense because, like, we lived overseas. There wasn't a lot of, I would say we got lucky and we were exposed to things that maybe a lot of American kids were not as well, on two sides of this. On the one side, you know, we didn't have access to like cartoons here, like in America, like that whole, like when my kids were little, cartoons in like most of like Hungary or Eastern Europe, it's pretty like outdated.
Yeah.
It's like old stuff, you know? So, you know, they could watch it and it's like, there's nothing, but here's the difference. Commercials, dude, commercials in between cartoons were pretty intense.
Really?
Yeah. Or I'll give you another example. We'd go to the movie to see like a Disney, like Mulan. Mulan uh-huh. was our big jam when our little girl was little.
Yeah.
And we go to, and the previews for the other movies,
uh-huh.
they would have sex scenes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or like insane violence.
Yeah.
And like, so you're having to like, what, you know, your five-year-old to not see that before they see Mulan.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
so there's this kind of like, you know, this strange world of like, they know that there's more out there, but also like their daily, weekly intake is very kind of harmless, if that makes sense. Like we didn't have the cartoons they had in America. We just didn't have any of that, good or bad. We just didn't have it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember riding buses in the Philippines when our daughter was like four, and they would put on these really violent gangster films or these really violent slasher films. And they'd be on the little TVs, you know, that are kind of in the bus. And we'd be trying to distract this poor little girl. Just like, there's another water buffalo. Oh, he's hiding behind a tree. Keep looking though. He might come back out. And there's this like person getting, you know, hacked up on the TV. It was just like, oh my gosh, quick. Look at something else.
So same thing. Oh, I mean, the best thing that ever happened on travel was the personal screens on the airplanes.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
before that we would fly, and I'll call them out. Usually it'd be Lufthansa. We would fly a German airline, and like the German culture has a very different view of the
yes.
body,
and then
most people. And so it would be. You remember when it was just like three TVs in the center of the mm-hmm. aisle that you would mm-hmm. all kind of focus on? And it, I mean, they never thought about kids. These were
right.
not kid movies, so
right.
we'd be trying to, you know, let's have another coloring book, another another puzzle, or whatnot. So in one sense, we were spared from some things, but you know, now our kids are. I mean, it's hard now. I mean, I have a 16-year-old. You know, and like Netflix and Hulu and all, and it's hard to,
right.
you know, I spend more time. I realize like I'm more interested in like building her up than I am in like the behavior of what to watch or not watch, because
right.
it's really a losing battle. You know, this idea of like, well, you know, and I had people tell me, oh my gosh, you know, the reason that, you know, one of our daughters really rebelled against the Lord. Most of my kids did, if I'm honest, which I always want to be, through their high school years.
Yeah.
High school was really tough for my kids, but we really encouraged like, you be you, we want to be with you. We don't want you to ever feel like you have to lie to us or hide from us. And let's go through life together, you know, where most parents are saying like, just do what we tell you to do and think what we tell you to think. And then those kids would go into college and really struggle.
Right.
For us, and again, I have no formula and I won't be writing a kid's, you know, marriage or a parenting book. It'll never happen. But for us, our kids really found their footing in Christ in their college years. And I mean, to where like we have such great relationships, but I remember parents always saying like, you haven't done enough daddy daughter dates. You let her, you know, watch things that she shouldn't. And we keep reminding them, dudes, our kids were raised at a Bible college in the middle of nowhere. If that's not an environment for perfect, they should have been perfect.
Right.
If circumstance could do that, they should be perfect, but they weren't.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of protecting kids, I think is moving in the wrong direction, because we have to be preparing kids, right? Yes. We have to be equipping them. And I think, you know, in thinking about what kinds of entertainment and what kinds of stories and what kinds of images they're consuming, of course, giving them something that's sort of developmentally totally inappropriate isn't going to help them prepare. But simply protecting them and not giving them the tools to think about these things isn't going to prepare them either. And they are going to encounter those ideas and those images and those stories at some point. And if they're not thinking about them, if we haven't given them help to like process, you know, what's the purpose of this story? What is this? What's the underlying meaning here? You know, what are these images doing for our sense of what's normal and what's good and what's beautiful and what's right and true? Then they're not going to have it at 25 or 35, or, you know, that's not a developmental thing that just happens on its own. Like, that's a thing that needs to be trained into people and helped and nurtured. Right. Go ahead.
Oh no. I was just going to say, like, do you feel like, yes, yes, and yes. But do you feel like you kind of grew into this understanding as your daughter got older? Or did you feel like you had that thought process, you know, when she was 4 or 5, or has it been a developing thought?
I think I was lucky that my wife has several older siblings, and we got a chance to see them with their kids before we had kids.
Oh,
and
there you go. Okay.
And I taught 5th grade for a couple years before I went off to get my degree to teach at university level. And my wife taught middle school. So we had some exposure to kids at sort of different developmental stages. And it gave us some help in thinking about how we wanted to navigate some of this stuff with our own kids. And same as you, like, I'm not going to be writing a parent book and a how-to, and I'm not going to hold myself up as the paragon of anything here. But I do think in this one area, we were pretty thoughtful about, we want our kids to be able to process these messages and think about what they're seeing, because we're not going to be able to control everything that they are exposed to. Mm-hmm. It's kind of not possible, and it's gotten increasingly less possible, right? As now even young kids have smartphones and, you know, it's just very difficult to control all of it. But my thinking was that some of the more, I don't know if dangerous is the right word, but some of the most influential stuff that kids are watching are the things that are actually geared towards them.
Yes.
And some of those things are pretty problematic.
Yeah.
So I had this, I mean, it was a joke, but it was only half tongue in cheek that I said I didn't allow my daughter to watch Cinderella until she could deconstruct it from a feminist perspective. And you know,
only an anthropologist could say those
words. Right?
I love it so much.
But of course it didn't work. My little embargo on Cinderella was broken when she was, you know, doing a sleepover at age 5 or something and saw Cinderella. And she came home and she said, "Oh, Cinderella." And I said, "Well, what did you think of Cinderella?" And we talked about it, and then we said, "Let's watch it." And so we sat down and we watched Cinderella. I had to go out and rent it, or get, I don't know what, I, you know, VHS, right? I had to go out and get the tape and bring it home. And we sat
Red
and
box.
I would pause it. Yeah, exactly. And I would pause it at various points and say, "You know, what do you think Cinderella could do to help herself right now?" And my, you know, wonderful little 5-year-old, she could make a rope out of the sheets, or she could throw pebbles at the dog and get him to bark for help. Or, you know, like, she kind of brainstormed these things that like Cinderella could do to save herself and not wait for the prince. And I thought, okay, this is what I want. I want my kids not just to be isolated from things that are happening in the world, especially things like Cinderella. Like, there's a lot of fine things about Cinderella, and she was attracted to all the pretty sparkly, you know, get dresses just like all her friends. But I don't want her to just consume it thoughtlessly,
right,
even at age 5. I want to give her some tools to think, I would say, Christianly, right? I would say in terms of how God made her as a person who has her own will and who will be responsible for her own soul in the sense of like who she's going to serve in life and how she's going to live her calling. Right. So I thought, well, I guess that starts now, you know, I guess we start it with Cinderella. And then when things get a little more, you know, dicey from here, hopefully she'll be ready to talk about it.
It's crazy how like, you know, it's almost like the music too. Like I think of this in the music and the movie, like where it's like the music that like we're the most worried about the kids listen to is like not even targeted to them necessarily, or the movies we're the most concerned about aren't. It's the ones we should be concerned about are actually written for them.
Yeah.
And I almost think that like even some of these new, I mean, I remember when Shrek came out and like just did a number on the Disney kind of concept of, you know, every princess needs a prince.
It's no way to behave in front of a princess.
Ooh, wow. She's as nasty as you are.
And it was the most refreshing, like exciting and fun. And I feel like they've really caught that, you know, in you know, even in the Frozen movies, and, you know, they're moving into a better direction for, especially for our girls. Cause again, I don't know how many girls do you have?
I have one girl and two boys.
One girl, two boys. I've got three girls, one boy. So I'm a girl dad primarily. And I am concerned that things are being depicted, not just like that are like morally good, but also that are like real for what they're going to need in their life. And not just, you know, these fake, false, you know, ideas that are out there that like, if you had this, then you would be complete and you would be whole. And, you know, because you get that at a very young age, it becomes, right. And it's cute and their animals are singing and there's, you know, it's all fun and games, but it becomes an identity that I don't want my kid to have that identity. I don't want my son to think that he's only the strong and valiant and he has to do all that. It's like, no, you're also weak and in need and you need God. And, but I think our kids' movies can do more damage than the movies we're worried about when they become teenagers.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause they're very persuasive. They're very compelling movies, right? Some of these are really engrossing and you feel things when you watch these movies. One of the themes that I've tried to get my kids to see in a lot of these movies is that all the main characters are rich. They're always rich people and or they're poor people who become rich. Yeah, and that's right. How they become happy, right? Like that there's not very many people who are poor or sort of middle income or working or whatever and stay that way and yet are happy. Right. Like that's not something that you see in very many movies. And yeah. I'm like, do you think you have to be rich to be happy,
right?
Or to be important, or to be valuable, or to be beautiful? Like, do you think those things go together? And,
right.
You know, those are questions that you can start asking a kid pretty early on. But if you don't ask the questions, then they're just like, oh yeah, you know, to be happy, you want to live in a castle. And to be happy, you got to have a lot of clothes. And, you know, that's just the world, right?
It becomes kind of ingrained into you. It becomes without, if there's no thought or no conversation, it's still happening. Either way, it was hard for us because like our kids would watch these princess castle movies and we literally lived in a castle. Our Bible college was in a castle in Europe. I mean, talk about like setting, like just, we just ruined them, literally ruined them for years because they're like, oh, I am a princess in a castle.
Yeah, here I am. It's the castle life, hashtag yeah. Castle life. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Although maybe that would dispel some of the myths because they'd be like, actually, it gets a little cold in the winter and door kind of sticks. And
it's scary and, you know, at night it's scary, but oh my God, isn't that so funny though? It's so funny how that happens.
Yeah.
As mentioned at the start of this episode, our church actively participated in aiding Ukrainian refugees across many international borders. We told these stories in our previous season of Crossing Cultures. Take a look.
I think something that we're constantly trying to remind people is that really war began like 8 years ago.
They were killed by snipers directly with the metal bullets, with guns.
Russia tried to start the civil war.
The ongoing war in Syria have triggered an epic humanitarian crisis, the biggest wave of refugees in modern history.
When somebody asked me the question, like, why did you get involved with Ukrainian refugees? Let's be honest, it was because of Syria.
Please pray. We need to fight. We need to be strong.
We've been able to acquire a couple vans to get people out.
The local church is taking in Ukrainian families who need help.
They've helped about 200 to 400 families per day.
I was talking to a fellow pastor here in Hungary. He asked me, it's like, so you mean people are letting strangers into their homes and letting them use the spare bedroom? I said, yeah. If this means crazy, then I am crazy. And so are several thousand of my countrymen.
You watch the news and we see these stories of things going on in the world, but you never expect to having it literally show up on your doorstep.
When we realized this was in our backyard, we thought, gosh, Lord, we've been praying about helping. What a perfect opportunity.
We've been so blessed to be able to help. We are meeting them at the border, picking them up, however we could be of service to them. Such a blessing for us.
I learned for life that if we see them with the eye of Christ, then we see the truth.
Crossing Cultures, Ukrainian Refugee Crisis. All episodes of Season 4 are available now on any podcast platform. And now, back to the show.
Hey, what would you, what was your, I'm kind of like taking us off of this great philosophical conversation on this. Did you see King Richard?
Yeah, I did.
Because I mean, Will Smith, I'm struggling because two of my favorite actors are up right now. Well, actually, I like Benedict, I can never say his name, Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch, but yeah.
Will Smith and Denzel Washington. You just can't get better than those two.
Yeah, for
so
real.
So how did you like King Richard? Because obviously it's a, you know, kind of very like real story for today. I mean, Venus and Serena Williams' dad, it's pretty well-known kind of, you know, person.
Yeah. No, I loved it. I'm a big tennis fan and I've been following professional tennis for a long time. And so certainly remember as Venus and Serena hit the scene and their dad, you know, Richard Williams was such a figure and such a character, right?
Oh, yeah,
so
totally.
Such a, you know, iconoclast, just doing everything differently than what, you know, you're supposed to do when you're, yeah, when you're bringing up tennis stars. But also kind of a difficult guy, like no question, like he would, you know, kind of ruffle feathers for sure. And I think that Will Smith did a great job. And I think that the movie overall was good, but there was a certain point in the movie where I was like, is this just going to be kind of like a hagiography, like just a hero worship of Richard Williams and sort of paint him in this like almost too idealized light. But then there was a scene with his wife, who's the actress, I can't recall her name, but she was phenomenal, who plays, you know, Oracine Price Williams. And she just kind of gives him a dressing down in the kitchen and she really lays out like some of the ways that he has made her life difficult. And I thought, okay, this is better. Like they've kind of saved it, you know, like they
humanized him.
Yeah. Humanized him, kept it from being too much of just a heroic biography, and brought some of his flaws into the, cause he's human, right? Like, of course he has flaws. And we saw things in his public persona that I think were indicative of some of those things going on with him. So overall, I really liked it, you know, recommend it to people. I think Will Smith deserves an Academy Award
at some point. Has he not won one?
He has not yet. Yeah. Oh, he's been nominated at least, this is like his third or fourth time.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't win
for Pursuit of Happiness.
Mm-mm, he did not. I know. Right.
Golly. That was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Concussion, wasn't that, he was in that too, right? He was the doctor. That was great as well.
He was great in that. He was great in Ali. He was nominated for.
He was so good in Ali. Oh my! I didn't know he's never won.
Even 6 Degrees of Separation, which was kind of one of his first dramatic roles, like I just thought he was, you know, really stood out, and you know, just does great work. So
yeah, the guy's brilliant. I mean, seriously, he's brilliant. Okay, who's the woman? Who's the best actress going to be?
Well, you know, I haven't seen the movie, but I've read a lot of things that have really gushed about Kristen Stewart's. Performance in the Diana Spencer movie called Spencer.
Really? And that's crazy because I haven't seen a lot of Kristen Stewart except for all the Twilight, you know, she did all those.
Yeah.
She was, right. That's the same girl, right?
Yeah. Same one. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is not, I'm not into this. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that wasn't, no.
Yeah. It wasn't acting. And you know what? That's a funny story because my girls, two of my girls, they're, one was a teenager, the other one was just about to become a teenager. And they're like, oh, we really want to, you know, watch these movies that are going to be coming out. Twilight. I'm like, what's it about? Oh, it's about vampires. You know, I was like, okay, well, you know, I want to, and they said, well, my older daughter's a reader. She said, I want to read the books. And I'm kind of a pretty fast reader. I'm very fast reader. So I'm like, okay, well, let's get the books, you know? And so I'm reading them, which made the movie so much worse for them when their dad knew as much about vampires and werewolves and the storyline. It just like, I kind of ruined the whole, cause like they could talk about with their girlfriends and I knew more.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's the best way to ruin any movie that your kid might want to see is to watch it or read it before. So, when we watched it, I was like, oh man, I'm struggling with this girl, but I'm excited to see her then in Spencer because that would be great. That would be just a kind of something different, something fresh.
Well, you know, just on the comment on the theme of like movies that have these messages that are kind of problematic and that we need to unpack, The Twilight are a great example of that, that they were very wholesome in one sense. You know, mm-hmm. they didn't sleep together until they were married, you know, and a lot of Christians were really kind of in favor of this. But one of my theologian colleagues here at Wheaton, Beth Felker Jones, wrote a book called Touched by a Vampire, sort of unpacking the theology that was in there because, you know, the author is a Mormon woman. Right. And there's a lot of actual Mormon theology embedded in this in terms of like eternal marriage and the ways in which these relationships are sort of supposed to unfold. And there's some, and of course, set aside like all of the like weird stalking behavior that like, you know, Edward was doing towards Bella.
A film that conditioned a generation of girls to think that love is keeping tabs on each other every waking moment.
Did you follow me?
I feel protective of you.
And even non-waking moments.
I like watching you sleep.
Do you do that a lot?
Just the past couple of months.
I know this looks creepy, but it's really romantic in the movie. I promise.
There were some really twisted relationship dynamics going on there. But totally stuff that like would be worth talking about with especially a teenage girl who's totally looking at this and just thinking, oh, this is beautiful and romantic. And this is how good relationships, you know, this is a relationship that I should feel really positive about and be like, let's talk about that for a second.
Exactly. And that's what I used to tell my girls. I would say this in my house. Why am I the only feminist in my house? Am I the only feminist? Oh, it was such a beautiful sermon. He's 109 years old, creeping on a 17-year-old.
But don't worry, it's not pedophilia because he looks 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, why am I the only feminist in my house? But I was overridden and my opinion didn't matter. So.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, you wouldn't say, don't go see it.
Right.
And you wouldn't say, you don't even have to say, don't enjoy it at a certain level.
Right.
But it's like, but you do have to notice this, like notice, okay?
Please just tell me you're thinking about it. Okay. Yeah.
He like goes in her room and darts out before she sees him. Like that doesn't seem weird to you? Like, come on.
People go to jail for that.
Exactly.
Just because he's a good looking vampire doesn't make it okay. That's the point.
Yeah, diamond skin does not get you out of everything. So.
Exactly. And that was the other thing is we got him to like read the book because the movies weren't out yet. So let's read the books because gosh, I mean, then the thinking really happens.
Right.
And we really enjoyed that. So, okay, we got to wrap up because it's been an hour and this is so fun though. And I think that we got there's a lot more we could be talking about this. We'll do this again.
Of course.
Because there's so many movies to unpack and ideas. And I think all the symbolism and the signs and it all just helps so much. So you got any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that there's a really nice bunch of ideas that are sort of embedded in a lot of these films. And like I said, I haven't seen them all. I've read about some of them, but these stories are so influential, you know, these narratives, some of them are ancient narratives that are now being repackaged, right? In, you know, obviously, like West Side Story is Romeo and Juliet. Like, what could be a more, you know, influential narrative? And just noticing the ways in which these narratives get repackaged can often be a way of understanding God's world better, understanding the human condition better. And I think there's a lot of that in these movies. And so I commend them to people. I encourage them to enjoy them, but also to be critical and just think deeply and get together with your friends and you know, spend time hashing these things out. People often say, oh, I think I'm overanalyzing it. I'm like, I don't think there's any such thing. Mm-mm, I don't think you can overanalyze.
Might appreciate the movie even more the more you do that. You just appreciate it more. Like, oh, they really thought this thing through. Or you expose flaws. I think it's so good. I so agree with you. And, you know, and we got to do this on one of our episodes is, you know, when everybody's afraid of certain themes and ideas, but the Bible covers just about every terrible theme and idea. And I mean, and yet we, you know, I mean, we don't sugarcoat the scriptures. I mean, there's a lot of like intense, controversial, hard, difficult, brutal, violent. I mean, all of that is there in the Bible, and it all serves value for us to understand a loving God. So we'll have to unpack some of the stuff in future episodes. All right. Well, thanks for being with us. We've had a great time and we'll see you really soon.
Thank you for listening to Crossing Cultures. Subscribe to our show on YouTube or any podcast platform to receive notifications of when new episodes are released. We also have previous seasons with loads of discussions on topics like race and the gospel, Ukrainian refugee crisis, and more. Follow us and take a look back at what God has been doing on this show. This episode was produced by Phil Metzger and Dr. Brian Howell and edited by Luis Lopez. This podcast is a ministry of Calvary San Diego. I'm your guest host, Lisa Ayu, and stay tuned for our next episode of Crossing Cultures, where Dr. Brian Howell and Phil Metzger have a conversation about gender identity with one of the leading experts on this topic. You don't want to miss it.